When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Perpetual Chess. We are doing this live from Washington Square Park, believe it or not, and I am here with a returning guest who I will introduce momentarily. First, I'd like to give a shout out to our presenting chess education sponsors. It's this little known company called Chessable.com. Of course, they've got tons of good opening courses, middle game courses. My guest today will have a lot more to say about this company because he is the CEO. But a quick reminder, if you're interested in checking out their content, one thing you can do is check out my list of recommended courses. They've got tons of free stuff too, but that's enough of a spiel for now because we will be discussing Chessable plenty. My guest today is the CEO of Chessable. I first interviewed him in January of 2020 when he was the chief content officer. Before that, he had started out just sort of working on a few courses for them. So you can hear more about his Chessable backstory, his story as a former rock star in our previous interview. But what we want to do in this one is catch up A, on our guest Chess and his travels. He's a busy guy. And B, there's lots of changes coming down the pike, upgrades coming with Chessable. So live from New York City, it is Geert Vandervelde. Welcome, Geert.
Hey, thanks so much for having me. And it's fun to finally connect in person. In one of my favorite spots in New York City.
Yeah, and as you know, Geert, I lived in New York for about 10 years. Had my fair share of days where I would take the subway in from Brooklyn, stumble on over to Washington Square Park, play a few games. So I don't get out here very often anymore, living kind of far away in New Jersey. But A, it's fun to be back. B, fun to be at Washington Square Park. And C, fun especially to get to meet you. So, Geert, I want to dive into your travels first and foremost, because I have trouble keeping up. I email you in your various places, follow you on Twitter, and of course, I know you were just in Reykjavik. Now you're in New York City. We got a trip report on Reykjavik from previous guest WGM Dina Belenkaya, but I'm going to hear a bit about that. But first, New York City. What brings you here, Geert?
We just filmed a promotional video with international master Levy Rosman, Gotham Chess. He just released his debut Chessable course, 1E4 repertoire. And we just really wanted to do something extra for that, for the promotion of that course. And he was available to film, and we decided to do it this week because it connected well for me and Patrick, our camera guy who's behind the camera there, in conjunction with the Reykjavik Open. So we asked Levy if he would be available to film right after the Reykjavik Open, and he said yeah. And so we linked up, and we filmed some good stuff the other day at the Marshall. Did like a kind of like documentary style interview, very loosely scripted, just asking him some questions and kind of building the story off of, you know, his life story. And it's going to be like a quick 2-3 minute video where he just kind of shares some insights into what his life is like now, like after all the success that he's had. And yeah, that's going to be I think a unique type of promotional video. Usually we're like a little bit more on the salesy side of it.
Right.
And this one is a little bit less salesy, and it's more about him, which I like that it's softer in the approach, in the marketing approach, let's say. So it's cool.
Nice. Yeah, it makes sense. I'm a bit jealous, of course, that you got to meet Levy in person. Obviously, I've gotten to interview him 3 times and sort of watch his career develop. And it's just amazing to see. And to me, when I do get to interview him, that's always the most interesting thing, because he's someone who, when I first interviewed him, he was reasonably well known, but he was basically just another chess streamer. So to see him reach this level that we didn't think was possible really for any chess content creator, it's really fun to see. And whenever I interview him, we try to talk some chess, but to me that's the most interesting story, is like this just sort of staggering degree of fame for a chess personality. But he seems to be handling it pretty well, I'd say.
Yeah, he's very down to earth, and that's definitely what came across also when we filmed him. And we basically, what we did is we filmed him during a cab ride from where he lives down to downtown Manhattan to the Marshall. And we just had a whole bunch of questions prepared and just asked him, just, you know, talk. And he's good at that.
Of course, yeah.
He had a lot to share, which is really nice. But yeah, I remember not directly meeting him, but I remember having some indirect contact with him, because a few years ago, Chessable sponsored the New York Marshals team in the Pro Chess League. It was like 3 or 4 years ago. And Levy was involved on the side with that team. And that's the first time I ever heard of him. And this was before he started doing YouTube and everything. And so it's just kind of funny to be here now a few years later, and he's got like, what, 3.5 million subscribers on his channel. So that success is pretty exciting. And it's great to finally like get a repertoire by him on the site, because it's he was one of the most requested presenters, one of the most requested creators. So to finally have that on the platform is awesome. And he did him and he worked with someone else on the repertoire, because he needed some support in making it, like finalizing it. Should we wait for the dogs?
It's funny. It's funny. Yeah.
But so like he did an amazing job with that repertoire, and also the speed at which he delivered that, it's like incredible.
Yeah, he seems to have figured out a few things in terms of like how to manage his time as he continues to grow. And so when you took this cab ride with him and got to ask him some questions about his background gear, was there anything that surprised you?
Was there anything that surprised me about Levy's journey? Well, he revealed that when he was very little, his parents or his mom looked all over the place for a school that would let him skip a grade.
Oh, really?
So it's clear that at a very young age he was really bright.
Right.
And so they finally managed to find a school where he could skip a grade and then went to school and everything. So I found that pretty interesting. I'm not sure if that's a big reveal or anything, but I was generally kind of really impressed with like how sharp he is. He's very empathetic, very, you know, like well spoken also. And so I think his success comes from just being a real person who just happens to really love chess, and he's great at like, I think like looking at chess from the way that it's experienced by people who are not deeply into it. So he has this ability to go both sides. Like, he's an international master, but he's also somebody who can look at it with like beginner's eyes and be like, well, what would a beginner want to hear? How would they want chess explained to them? And I think that's like part of his success, probably.
Yeah, I agree. And one thing to add from my interview with Levy, of course, it mostly got good feedback, but I know a couple people were surprised when Levy said that chess is really boring. And you're having spent time with him and what you say, I don't want to speak on Levy's behalf, but I think it's clear from how he devotes his time that he doesn't really think chess is really boring. He may have been referring to classical chess, 5-6 hour games that you sit there and watch every minute and wait for a move to be made, which I know everyone doesn't even agree with that. But anyway, I think Levy's enthusiasm for chess speaks for itself if you watch it. But Geir, I want to rewind a little bit, because as you mentioned, you're coming from Reykjavik. Obviously,
yeah.
Reykjavik's got the cheap flights to and from New York, so coming here makes sense, even if it's on the company's dime. But I want to hear a bit more about that, because I just interviewed WGM Dina Bilenkaya. Some listeners may have heard, and she gave a bit of a trip report, but she is all business. She was like, yeah, it was fun to go to Reykjavik. It was a good opportunity to make content. I'm happy with my results, beating two grandmasters, but I didn't get to hang out much. Now, you, on the other hand, weren't playing, so I want to hear your trip report.
Yeah, mine was very different. We went there because Chessable sponsors the Reykjavik Open, and so we wanted to, and also simultaneously, we had the Chessable Masters, the fourth edition of it, happening, you know, last week, or actually this past week that we're connecting in now. And so we wanted to create some additional content with the people at the Open. And so we interviewed Dina and a whole bunch of other people, for example. And so we wanted to film some material with them. And then we made an after movie. So we had a couple of days where we weren't at the tournament, but we went to the southeast side of the island, and we filmed a whole bunch of the beautiful nature that is Iceland, because that's kind of part of the appeal of going to Reykjavik and playing in Iceland, is you get to also, if you want to, you get to explore that amazing island. So we filmed some additional material, and I think once we have finalized editing the promotional video for that tournament, I think many more people will be super excited to go. And they already had record number this year of participants, with over 400 people being at the tournament. But we hope to help them grow that to maybe double or something in the next couple of years, because it's really, really nice tournament.
Yeah, I was there once in 2006, and to what you mentioned about seeing the sort of moonscape throughout the country as you travel.
Yeah,
I didn't do that time. I was in and out, and I regret that. I didn't even make it to the Blue Lagoon. I got sick on the one day I was going to go there. So I definitely want to get back there. And I agree with you about that one. But as I mentioned to Dina, I also feel like there's a lane for these big open tournaments, especially as they start to bring in more streamers. I mean, there's so many chess fans listening who want the chance to interact with people like this. And you can bring in top players, you can have streamers, and to have chess enthusiasts across the spectrum have time to socialize, I think, especially in Europe. But hopefully we can get something like that in the U.S. as well, something slightly less frenetic than the continental chess tournaments. I think it'll be fun to see the Reykjavik Open grow, but tournaments like Sunway Sitges as well.
Yeah, there's the nice thing about any of those tournaments is Sunway Sitges is kind of super relaxed. They really take their time. Very Spanish.
Right.
The Reykjavik Open is more compact, and I think that is also partially the appeal, is that, me too, we're working dads, so we can't afford to go away for 2 weeks and just play chess. We'd like to get it all done within a week, right? And so that's part of the appeal, I think, of the Reykjavik Open is you go there, you have a couple of double rounds, and you can get you can get a 9-round tournament in 5 days or 6 days. And then if you want to make it two weekends in a work week, you can take 1 week off, play the tournament, see a little bit of Iceland, and boom, the next Monday you're back home and you can just go back to work. And I think that these types of tournaments that are shorter in length as far as number of days goes, but still have this kind of opportunity for people to play longer games and play more rounds, is really appealing. So probably a future format.
Yeah, I agree. And Dina, of course, was mentioning that the two games a day is tough, but she doesn't have a day job, obviously full-time content creator. Mm-hmm. She's also pretty focused on her chess, trying to get to 2400 FIDE in order to get the IM title. But I think for a lot of casual players, if I went, I would take a couple buys. I'm just not going to kill myself to play every single game.
Yeah.
And I often encourage that for people who do make the trip, because even though it's tempting to play every single game, it's fun to play, it's a big investment, I still feel like less can be more in these circumstances.
There's a little bit of a tendency, I think, for chess players to want to maximize the amount of chess being played.
Yeah.
Even at the Reykjavik Open, there's two additional Blitz tournaments.
Right.
Well. And I think that's okay. If you're really into that and you're going for the chess, then sure, probably I would recommend going to tournaments and also trying to experience the rest of the place that you're visiting and not just only playing chess. Because, if you're in a country like Iceland, there's some cool stuff to see.
Yeah, and I had a good time on the social front when I was there, too. And definitely, to me, that's got to be part of the experience. Now, last thing before we talk some chessable gear.
Yep.
So it's been quite a whirlwind. Do you actually get to go home to Spain after this?
Tomorrow, yeah. I'm flying tonight, and then it's Easter tomorrow, and we traditionally have a or Easter Sunday. It's been Easter weekend, obviously. We traditionally have like a big barbecue at our place. Spain is kind of nice during this time of year.
I believe it.
So we invited a whole bunch of friends and family to come over, and we're going to have a barbecue and good food and just hang out. And then obviously egg hunt and all the stuff with the kids.
Awesome. Yeah, my family is not super religious, but the kids love Easter so much that we do the Easter egg hunt and all that stuff. And that's why I'll be jetting back to New Jersey this evening after this interview to get ready for tomorrow. And Geir, one thing I forgot to mention in the intro, of course, most listeners will know, but obviously Chessable was acquired by Chess.com. Mm-hmm. So that's been a massive change, obviously, for you personally, for your company, for the chess world at large, although maybe that's not being felt as much yet. But one thing I'm sure that I asked you once before off the record, but I'm sure listeners might be wondering, Chessable being based in Spain, do you think that those offices will persist over time? Do you think that you will continue to be based in Spain with Chess.com, of course, being United States based, although mostly remote workers?
Well, Chessable has always been a remote first company. Mm-hmm. So when we started out, it was all remote, and we didn't really get the office until a few years ago. And the reason why we got it is because we kind of like settled with the management team in Barcelona. So we have like pretty much the core management of Chessable all based in Barcelona. And we, at the time that we were growing a lot, we hired more in Barcelona. One, because it's a great place for chess. And two, because there's a lot of talent there. And it's just nice to have kind of like a core team of people close, like in person, because we really do value the in-person experience and like being able to work together. And so far we've had Eric and Danny already come over to the office, and they've already seen it, and we're gonna soon have a few of the other core management team members come over to the office in Barcelona. Is it going to keep existing? I don't know, but for the time being, I think they also see the value in it. And if it ends up having to be closed or something in the future, we'll discuss it. But it's not at all been on the agenda to like not have an office and not do that.
Okay. And Eric being, of course, Chess.com co-founder Eric Albest, and Danny being Chief Chess Officer Danny Wrench. And Geir, on the topic of the merger, is there anything, like, what's been the biggest adjustment in terms of sort of incorporating Chessable into Chess.com?
I think the biggest change has been that pretty much as soon as the merger went through, we looked very closely at who of the people at Chessable, but also at Chess24, etc., could step up into new roles at Chess.com and could start managing bigger teams and work with more people. So we've had a lot of managers of ours step into new roles at chess.com and like start managing teams there, and that was something that I was really excited about for all of our team members, because I wanted this merger not to just be this let's say like takeover. I really was like excited for the opportunity for all of my team members to step up and get to work with a much, you know, like much bigger play field. And so they, yeah, like a lot of our current managers went over there, and now we're in the process of like realigning everything and making sure that the teams at Chessable continue to operate, that they've continued to operate in the same way, and that we bring some of our processes and some of our knowledge over to Chess.com and vice versa. Right? They also have a lot to share, and so it's been a kind of like talent exchange, if you will. And that's been really exciting, because I think a lot of people from the outside thought that it would be like massive layoffs and like all kinds of like crazy stuff or something, because they have this idea that an acquisition or a merger comes with that kind of thing. But that wasn't the case at all. It was really like us just bringing together both teams, and like aligning culturally was super easy in that sense, because we were pretty much on the same mission, and now we're just like excited to get moving forward.
Okay, yeah, glad to hear it. Obviously, I mean, I've had a few guests express concerns about layoffs down the road. Like, I understand, like, I'm glad to see things are going well, but obviously we all have the shared mission of growing chess, and if we do that, you know, I think both companies will prosper. I think from the listener/chess fan perspective, it's nice to see that
Hans here.
That chess.com now links directly to Chessable.
Yep.
So what are you guys doing in terms of content? Like, are you, obviously chess.com has this massive platform with a lot more sort of lower level or newer chess fans, I guess you could say, more casual chess fans. So is that going to affect Chessable's offerings at all? Are you going to try to cater to them more?
Absolutely. Yeah, that's the main challenge, I would say, that we have, is that like there's this kind of like rating gap in the middle. Chess.com's average rating is like 1150 or something, or maybe it's even like 1050, somewhere between there. Chessable's average user rating is about 1800. And so we have traditionally focused more on the, let's say, advanced chess players or intermediate and up type chess player, and that's where the majority of our content is. And so now we are focusing more on creating a lot more beginner content and even slight post-beginner content. So I think that will be a big change in terms of what we're going to offer and what's going to come out. At the same time, like, we're not going to stop making content for the advanced players and for the stronger players. It's just that I think the balance is going to be a little more skewed towards like bringing in more beginner or at least like creators who are interested in creating content for beginners. And and one other change I think will be that we're gonna work with a lot more streamers and for them to be able to create content for their audiences, which I actually think is really exciting because that's a different audience as well.
Yeah, well, anyone in particular that you can reveal? I mean, I saw Danny Wrench's name on the coming soon page, but who else is coming down the pike?
There's quite a few, but let's say like as far as like bigger names go, I don't think we've signed up anyone. But I mean, besides Levy Rosman, I mean, we have Ben Feingold. He's coming with a repertoire. So I think those two are probably like the bigger ones that we have. But conversations are ongoing with a lot of them.
Excellent.
Yeah, I'm hoping that there's a potential for a collaboration between AKA Nemzo and Alex Banzia.
So okay,
if that gets signed, then that would be a really big one. It would be really nice.
Yeah, that would be fun. Alex Banzia is going to be on How to Chess Season 3 coming soon, and I get a lot of emails from people who are fans of his content. So
yeah, he won a lot of Chessable awards this past year, and well deserved too. Like, he did a lot of work. So.
Yeah, my interview with him is still forthcoming, but I'll tell a funny story. But when I reached out to interview him, I told him I get a lot of emails from him, and then we did the interview, and then an hour later, I got a message from him saying like, "Hey, when are you going to get Alex Banzi on the pod?" So I took a screenshot and sent it to him, and he said, "Oh, I thought you were just saying that. Like, I didn't know you actually got messages saying that people are fans of his content."
Yeah, for sure.
So one question I have here is, obviously the Chessable catalog has expanded massively to the point where now there's like multiple courses on like every opening, and new content continues to come out. So do you worry that there's going to be like basically too much on a given opening?
No, I don't think so. So the thing was, I think you have to think of the evolution of Chessable as a content library and like a course library. In a little bit of a historical perspective, we were very focused on creating a kind of like comprehensive, complete library of courses, right? So for the past, let's say, 4 years, we were focused on filling in all the gaps that existed. So if there was some obscure variation or something, then we wanted a course on it. And I think there's still some minor gaps.
An idea. I just don't think I'm not going to get it together to do it. But.
Yeah. I mean, there's minor gaps in the library. But for the most part, I think we have courses on every single topic now.
Yeah.
And so now that we're there, now that we have a kind of comprehensive library of courses that cover all the openings, most of the middle game plans, a lot of the tactics and strategy. We have a lot of the chess classics up on the website now. Now the focus is going to be not on like trying to replace courses with new courses. It's going to be on helping creators build their own personal libraries. So like if you, finally release that first course of yours,
right,
which we want on the site, then like the long-term plan would be for us to work with you to create the Ben Johnson library where you would have maybe 8 to 10 courses and they're on all sorts of different topics so that people who like you, who prefer you as their presenter, as their coach, as their personal trainer, if you will, to have a complete library there. So a lot of the, let's say, first generation Chessable authors, they have this. They have a complete kind of library of courses. But now what we want to do is we want to take that second generation, and now like all these new authors coming in, we want to work with them to basically make like comprehensive libraries of theirs. So it's kind of like you have to think of Chessable as like the gym.
Right.
And then every single author is a personal trainer. And it might be that like the that like Hikaru Nakamura is your preferred personal trainer, but it could also be that Alex Bangia is your preferred personal trainer. And so what we want to do is we want to work with both and have courses by all of them on the platform, and make sure that like if you're coming to Chessable because you want to only learn from one particular presenter or something, that we can take you all the way from beginning to end and have like enough content for you to like continue to study from and with that particular personal trainer.
Yeah, makes sense. I mean, as I've mentioned many times, I end up with a lot of Christoph Solecki's courses, and I know a lot of people feel that way.
Yeah, that's exactly. He's one of your preferred
teachers. Sure.
And it's the same, like Simon Williams is a really popular teacher, and people really love his content, and so he has a lot of courses up on the site. But we want that for everyone.
And you think there'll be enough demand where it will be continuously worth it for the creators to continue to build out their offerings?
So, yeah, I think so. Maybe the difference will be in that maybe a single course, if you just produce a single course, then maybe the single course isn't going to be as outsized, impactful for you as like the courses like that we released when we didn't have a single course on it.
Right.
So for a typical example would be, we had a Catalan course by Srini Natarajan, master from India. And that was the first time that we had a proper, really good, high-level Catalan course, but we just released a new one by Grandmaster Alonso. And so now we have like competing courses, if you will, but they are both like now, so Srinath's course was very successful, right? But now Alonso's course is getting really successful. So now we have two options. And so now we're working with Srinath on saying like, hey, you have like two courses up on the site, but you know, what about doing some repertoires for the black side? And what about doing some middle game stuff? And then maybe a single course won't sell the same amount of courses, but if you have eight of them,
right,
then you're still getting like a lot of these courses will continue to sell. And like that kind of core audience that starts evolving around a single creator becomes larger over time. And so then it doesn't become about like trying to sell a single course. It becomes about managing that audience on Chessable and on working with those creators to kind of like help them service all those different members of their individual community. So now we're in this new phase, which I think is my most like exciting phase, is where I really want to spend a lot of time working with new authors and coach them, etc., to manage and like develop their audiences, basically.
Okay. Yeah, and of course I interviewed Grandmaster Srinath Narayanan. He's training Gukesh, so he, you know, obviously high-level trainer. Now Chessable, as we discussed in our prior interview, and actually as your own story attests, it has its roots in like also community-driven courses from non-titled players. And as you mentioned,
super important to the success of Chessable is the fact that we have community authors producing community content, and like some of our best-selling courses are created by club players.
Yeah, some of my favorites. I always shout out the Checkmate Patterns course.
That's one of my favorite examples.
Yeah. And so with, as you mentioned, the influx of chess.com customers with sort of a lower rating base, so is there still room for people listening to create courses catering to lower rated players?
More and more room. Like I said, I don't think you have to worry about like saturating the marketplace, if anything. I mean, if we take an example of, let's say, Amazon or something, right? Like that, they could grow the Amazon marketplace for a long time just with books. And I think with chess, like chess is such an infinite game. And there's, even if, let's say, there were 6 or 10 authors all doing a course on the Svechnikov Sicilian, they would all have a different way of explaining it and bringing it to you. And so then it becomes about personal taste. And so there's like not only is there like room for like the different levels that we create content on, but it's also style, right? It could be that like one person, like you said, like you really tend to like gravitate towards Christoph Solecki's as the personal trainer of choice, but it could be that, like, in the future you want somebody else to teach you. And it could be that Christoph Slecki doesn't appeal to all these beginners coming in, and that, you know, maybe they will want something, some other author to do it. And one other thing is that I really want to happen is I want to bring a lot more female authors onto the platform.
Yeah.
And spend a lot more energy on getting them to produce content, because we have a limited amount of women creating courses and presenting them, and I think it's really important to have them, you know, represented on Chessable more and more. So we try to build that out more as well.
Yeah, that's definitely a good goal. And hearing you discuss this makes me think of one of the most common criticisms I hear of Chessable, which is that every catalog is so voluminous, you know? And I know that you guys have some people working on sort of pared down repertoires, and I always recommend the short and sweet courses, as well as the quick starters for when you start out, to especially in the opening realm, to sort of help you wrap your head around an opening and then sort of use the extra stuff as like on an as-needed basis. But I do wonder, like, is there going to be any sort of philosophical change in terms of, like, just how many lines are within each course? Like, how do you respond to that common criticism?
I mean, it's a fair point, and we're working on multiple solutions. First of all, and this is just to take, like, a step back, a lifetime repertoire, it's supposed to be kind of like a comprehensive manual, right? It's not supposed to be this thing that you study front to back, like a phone book. Like, you use the phone book to, like, leaf through it, and, or, well, nowadays we don't use a phone book.
Right.
But as an analogy, is you use that to find something that you need at a certain point in time. So, like, if you look at, like, a lifetime repertoire, which is supposed to be comprehensive, the idea is you start with a quick starter guide, you get a feel for the opening, and then you add lines and train lines as you go, as you meet them, right, in practical play, whether online or over the board or whatever. And so over time, your study load will increase. But again, like, the idea that, like, you would have to, like, study a lifetime repertoire front to back, like all 1,000 variations of one, let's say, like, that's not really the point. The point was more to make sure that, okay, if it isn't covered, then probably it's not important enough. And a lot of the sidelines and stuff that are covered in, like, later chapters in the course are also kind of there just to have, but not necessarily for you to have to study front to back, let's say. So that's first of all, like, about the size of the courses, is we kind of strive for comprehensiveness, because we want people to have a one-stop shop with them. Second of all, now you asked about, like, what are we doing about, like, the kind of, like, too large size of these repertoires and stuff. We've been releasing courses of different sizes now. So we have this series called 100 Repertoires,
right,
which are really small, like repertoires of 100 variations or less. And we also just released a feature called Priority Lines, which is a version one still, but what it does is it compares your play from your play zone level to the variations in a repertoire. And if you toggle that feature, then now the different amount of variations that you have will change based on your play zone level. So if you are a 1900 rated player, then and you toggle the feature, now all of a sudden the total amount of variations that you have to train in a repertoire will go down from, you know, the total to whatever makes more sense. And so it's like a data-driven.
That's great.
Data-driven approach. So that's one thing that we just released, and we're going to work on that to make it completely personalized, so that over time any level of player can take one of these repertoires, toggle that feature, and then, like, they will get a very much condensed amount of study load for a course, and then that will be much more practical for them, because it's completely based on their personal level and what they're meeting in their practical play, in their play zone online, whatever.
And that's from the chess.com play zone, or
both?
Okay.
Both the big play zones. So
chess.com, oh, awesome.
Yeah,
and Lee Chess, that's awesome. And the change you described here, I know that you've mentioned that you've got sort of a broader rollout called Chessable 3.0. Is this part of that?
this is part of the Chessable 3.0 campaign, which, like, we're calling it Chessable 3.0 because if you think about Chessable as, like, this thing that's evolving over time, the first version of Chessable was just, you know, Chessable proper when it was first launched. The second version of Chessable was when we refactored all the code, we had a unified code base, and then we could start, like, building features on top of it and like, releasing things like Puzzle Connect, which is a feature that takes, like, the tactics from your games, like the missed tactics from your games, and turns them into a personalized course. And so Chessable 3.0 now is like this thing called Priority Lines, but it's also now like work that we're doing on creating a completely personalized study experience. So it's about like now making Chessable this tool for you to train you. And so we're calling it 3.0 because that's like we've now laid the infrastructure for that, and now features are coming out that are going to be, you know, related to that. One of the things that, a lot of our members have asked for example, is to have a feature, like a deviation dashboard, if you will, where it shows, once you've played your game, where you've left your repertoire, and then it highlights this and tells you, oh yeah, you need to go back. So that's one other thing that's going to come out in the future. Then we have Priority Lines, which will help you condense your study load. We have Puzzle Connect, which like hones in on where you've missed your opportunity, so you can train all those tactics that you've missed, so that maybe you can, you know, you like see what your blind spots are. And then over time, we're going to continue to build on that. So that's what Chessable 3.0 is now. Like, we have the infrastructure for personalization, and probably Chessable 4.0 will be fully personalized.
Okay, and we're recording here on April 7th. Is there a launch date for Chessable 3.0, or is it more a sort of gradual rollout, like rolling features being introduced?
It's just more of like a group term that we're using to explain to customers like where we are in time. So it's not like it's not, you know, like Chessable is not like a Microsoft Word where like you get a new, you can download a new version onto your computer. It's more of like a term that we're using to explain that we have a lot of different features now that are about personalization and customization.
Excellent. Yeah, definitely look forward to those changes. A lot of it is stuff that I've seen sort of people describe that they've sort of hacked their way into doing on their own, that it sounds like now you guys are going to sort of incorporate holistically into the site, like in terms of like, you know, learning from the new move that you didn't know and stuff like that, and calibrating the courses to your level and so on. So it sounds good. Well, Garrett, we got a Patreon question. So listeners, of course, who support Perpetual Chess can send in questions. This one is from Sean Krause. And he asks, he says, would it be possible to add the ability to flag a move as an alternative good move while studying? So Sean says he frequently studies multiple opening courses in parallel with overlapping lines, and the recommendation in one course can pop up as an incorrect move in another. So he said that's the only thing that's annoyed him in the couple years in the otherwise wonderful world that is Chessable.
Well, nice to hear. Thanks, Sean, for the question. I think that's a... I feel his pain. I understand that, but it's also something that is really deep in the weeds, right? It's probably a use case, right, as we say, like that is very small. And so when we work on the platform at large, right, we prioritize things that have a big impact. And this is one of those like small things that maybe over time we can find a solution for that particular pain point that he has, which is like, I have two repertoires, and in one repertoire this line, and like when I play this move it's correct, and in the other one it's incorrect, and now what do I do? Because like, you know, I'm studying both, and I don't, and it's kind of confusing, right? Because it's about confusion and it's about creating clarity, and but it's also a really small thing. So can we solve that problem short term? Probably not. I'm sorry, Sean, like I hate to disappoint you, we're probably not going to prioritize that because there's bigger work that needs to be done. But maybe over time, long term, we can take a look at all those things. We do collect all the feedback and we listen, but it's always a case of like prioritization for like what really will be a big pain point and what will be small. So for example, like the Priority Lines thing was super complicated for us to release. That was a difficult feature to build and like program, but now that it's there, we're gonna keep iterating on that one. That was a big one for us. And like Puzzle Connect was another one. These are like features that basically help players to really personalize their experience, and that's the direction that we want to go in. And this is probably really kind of like a minor one.
Yeah, that makes sense. You know, you probably can pause one course. I have had the experience where I was telling you this offline. Like, I don't know which course a line is from. So it's like I know the right line in one course and I know the right line in the other, but I don't necessarily know which one. But there are, as we were talking about, workarounds, and obviously you guys have to start with the most requested features and then filter down from there. So, Geir, I want to ask you about your OTB and your own chess game, but is there anything else about sort of chessable changes that you feel like we should share here?
No, I think, like, people should know that we really do listen and we really pay attention to what is being shared with us via the customer service. hello@chessable.com is our preferred way for you to get in touch with us and send us your feedback. We really do listen. We really do want all the feedback that we can get from our customers to improve the platform over time. We're not done with our mission of trying to make the best possible place for you to train and learn chess in a way that, like, is completely tailored to you. So we're only just getting started with the journey of making a place that is completely customized to your own needs.
I thought of one other question, actually, because we've talked a lot of openings, and you know, as regular listeners will be tired of hearing me mention, I'm writing a book. I write a little bit about Chessable in it. Don't worry, I mostly say good things. But I do say that my primary use of Chessable is openings. Like,
sure.
Some people, you know, might prefer to read books on Chessable. Some people might prefer to do tactics there. But for me, number one is openings. A distant second is tactics. But for people who do middle game and tactics courses, like, are there any, like, Chessable 3.0 upgrades that they should know about in that regard, or any sort of longer term plans that maybe aren't rolled out yet?
Look, it's one of my biggest, like, things that I want the way that we study strategy to be improved. So hopefully once we get to 4.0, we'll have a couple of new things released that make, like, the experience of, and I'll wait for the the loud street noises.
Some of them, yeah.
But yeah, strategy is not, like, probably Move Trainer right now is not ideal for studying strategy. It works, right?
Like,
it still allows you to train strategic positions and repeat them over time with scheduled in-space repetition. But I want to make that experience a lot better. And I think a lot of us at Chessable, like, are excited to start working on that particular area where we can make the studying of strategic games a lot more interactive. There's other ways to present that material. So that would be something that we work on in the future. Right now, the way that Chessable evolved, it was as a, let's say, like, spaced repetition scheduling tool for openings. And it works perfectly for tactics, I would say. I would probably say that it's one of the better tactics trainers, although there's also, like, things that we can do to improve that experience, because there's other things in the market that we know of that are doing some things that Chessable's Move Trainer is not doing yet that we want to incorporate.
Any examples of that? Or
a good example would be, like, there's, like, older software, you know, like CT Art, for example, that allows you to train a tactic with multiple, like, when you're trying to solve a puzzle, it reverses back. Once you've solved the main line of the tactic, it reverses back to a certain, like, branch off point, and it says, okay, now solve the slightly suboptimal defense. Like, did you see this line as well?
Nice, right? Yeah.
So in the future, we would love to have a tactics trainer that makes you not just solve the puzzle one way, but makes you solve it in multiple ways. And maybe also what we can think about is, like, for openings, is not just, you know, like, teaching the opening from one side, but teaching it from the other side as well, because it's super important for you when you're doing your opening training to also not just memorize your own moves, but to actually memorize why you're, like, what is happening on the other side of the board, right? And so there's a little bit of that. There's one thing you can do already, which I don't think a lot of people realize, but you can, for example, when you're studying with Move Trainer, you can flip the board. So you can, for example, train your openings by seeing it from the other side of the board, which is kind of like an in-between solution to this. But maybe in the future it could be that, like, we intersperse, you know, you having to repeat your particular variation in an opening with like a quiz moment where it's like, okay, well, wait a minute, what is Black supposed to be playing here, right? And that way you start to really kind of get a more comprehensive idea of what this opening is about and how it's played and etc. So things like that we're thinking about and considering.
Sounds good. Look forward to it. All right, Garrett, last major topic. I do want to talk about your OTB game. Now, I know you played in one of the events in Viking Zay. Have you played since then?
No, I have not. And I don't think I will be playing any like longer games for a while. I'll be honest with you. I love chess, but I prefer the shorter format. So if I'm going to be doing any more OTB, it's probably not going to be classical games. It'll probably be more blitz and rapid. I just enjoy the faster time controls. I'm a little impatient, and so I enjoyed my time at Vikensay tremendously, but the length and the duration of the games were pretty exhausting for me.
Yeah, I think when you're a dad, you feel that more acutely. That's at least my experience. I mean, I enjoy it when I get into it, but you feel the time commitment for sure.
Yeah, it's that, and it's also, I felt like, you know, like I'm sitting there, I play like move one, and then my opponent goes into like a 10 minute long think, and I'm just like, come on.
Right.
I played 1b3. It's not going to be that long. You know, you don't need 10 minutes to think, but okay, you know, like he wanted to spend a lot of time like getting the position and like feeling what, like having a plan, and that's his good right. He has an hour and a half to make these moves. But then I'm just sitting there and I'm just like 10 minutes, and I'm just like, this is why I like blitz.
Right. The dad or the mom, I should have said, by the way. Now, let me ask you, Garrett. So I know you said you've been a Chessable super user at times. Like, with your affinity for faster chess, are you still able to work on your chess more generally?
Yeah, I still study courses. I have, like, you know, like streaks.
Right.
Where I get into it more when I have more time. I still love studying chess. I still play every single day. And I have probably not stopped playing. I must have like an unbroken record of having played online games for at least, I don't know, 6 years. Like, I literally have not played a game of chess I've not missed playing a game of chess online for 6 years at least.
In a day?
Yeah. I've played every single day, minimum of 5 games.
Man, you got me beat there. That's impressive.
So, I mean, a lot of it was, whether it's anonymously or in like, I just love playing chess.
Yeah, I mean, and you've made decent progress along the years too, right? Do you still are you still pushing to improve, or is that on the back burner right now?
Past year, I have not pushed to improve. My main focus was on navigating all the complexity that we had last year with like some of the reorganization and some of the changes. And then, of course, now with the merger with chess.com, my focus has been on that. So I play for fun. I've been stuck at a rating plateau now of like 1900 chess.com for a couple years.
Yeah.
But I did go from, you know, my original rating on chess.com must have been like 1400-1500 to 1900 in like 4 or 5 years. And, you know, I think like for an adult guy, like I'm in my 40s, that's not terrible.
Yeah, no, that's pretty impressive. And I'm in the same boat. I mean, I feel like you need to, you know, there's energy and entropy in all things, and I made a push in tournament chess, played a bunch for a year, and then started working on this book. Also didn't make any progress, by the way, at least from a rating perspective, although I feel like I learned some things. But then there comes a point where you're just like, all right, this needs to go to the back burner for a while.
Yeah.
And you know, I'll rise again. And I always encourage listeners to check their priorities and make sure that the amount of time they're putting in makes sense.
I've replaced given context. My original goal was to reach like 2000 classical rating, you know, like FIDE rating. And I've replaced that goal now with wanting to reach a 2300 chess.com rating. And for me, that would be pretty cool. Then I could say I'm like chess.com master or something. That would just be fun.
Excellent. Well, we have a guest here that I'd like to have hop on. But Geert, anything to add before we do make him come on over here?
No, nothing to add. Just really happy to get to meet you in person and get to chat a little bit and catch up. And hopefully all of the shouting and surrounding environment didn't affect the audio of the podcast too much. But it's been really fun. And of course, I love Washington Square Park, so I'm going to try and get a blitz game in or two with some of these guys.
Excellent. Yeah, shout out to anyone who made it through this, because, you know, the reason I started Perpetual Chess is A, I love chess, but B, I love podcasts. And I will admit, that when I start listening to one that's live outside, my finishing rate goes down a lot, because often I just, something happens where I can't concentrate, basically. So thank you to everyone still with us. And let's bring in Han Xu, who of course is a Chessable author and doesn't live in New York City, but as luck would have it, I get to meet two online friends in person. So you should come in front of the camera, Han. So Han, of course, is the author of several Chessable courses, but including Dubov's Explosive Italian, which I have recommended in the past. I'm a particular fan of. Nice to meet you. This is literally the first time we've met in person, even though we've interviewed, we've collaborated, done classes online. So Han, unlike Geert and I, is about to play a chess tournament, right?
Yes, I'm doing the FIDE Open on the Marshall.
And did you play round one, or is the...
I played round one. Yeah, I made a draw.
Okay.
Yeah?
How was the game?
It was, I was spending a lot of time and I was losing momentum, and I decided to offer a draw at the right moment, and my opponent accepted.
Excellent. And this is a over 2000 tournament,
over 2000,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I like those tournaments. And so were you worse when you offered a draw?
It was equalish.
Okay.
Yeah, but I was slightly better with white out of the opening. It was a Karokhan Panov. He played this bishop e6 variation, and I had the right setup, but then I went slightly astray, and he got good play, but it was equalish. Yeah.
Okay.
But the initiative was shifting, and there were a lot of tactics on his side. So.
Excellent. Yeah, and for listeners who haven't caught my prior interviews with Han, he is a Chess Steps trainer. We did an adult improver interview. He's made good strides. Like Geert and I were discussing, he also sort of dips in and out of tournaments. So as you got ready for this one, Han, what did you do to get back into the OTP mindset?
Like Geert said, one of the most important things is to sleep well.
Yeah.
So I think if you're well rested for a tournament, and that's probably the best advice.
So that's it. Just sleep well and you'll win all your games?
Well, that's not so easy in New York, right?
Right, that's true.
You have to get used to it.
Sleep is so important for
yeah.
For
yeah.
Yeah. That's probably the most important thing, to sit down and have that focus. Like, to be able to sit there and think long and just feel like you can be creative. I need to sleep, man.
Yeah, I mean, but it's easier said than done. Like, I'm generally a good sleeper. The one time I can't sleep is when I'm playing chess tournaments.
Yeah, because it's mulling your
mind. Yeah, your brain's just racing.
Et cetera. Yeah. So that's maybe, like, a really interesting area where, like, you know, people can find support. I know Benji Porto, right?
Yeah, shout out to Benji. Yeah.
Have you had him on the podcast?
I have not. I still need to make that happen, but I enjoy his blog posts.
He was coaching, I think, the British team, I think, at the Olympics.
Yeah, the British women's team, yeah.
Yeah, and he was helping them prepare, like, mentally for games and such. And I think that was really interesting, because he has a lot of interesting insights on what you can do to kind of, like, ground yourself, and also to, like, maybe... help yourself, like, find, like, moments where like this, like, where you've played a game and maybe you've lost painfully, and it's, you know, it's 9 o'clock at night now. What do you do to calm yourself
down? Develop
so
a routine,
get into that state of rest, and
like mindfulness.
It's mindfulness. It's very much about mindfulness.
Yeah I'm a meditator, but often lapse in that department, and maybe that's something I do try to
super
emphasize
hard.
It before I play at tournaments, but maybe I need to think about it as at night, because it's a serious, I mean, it really affects your performance, as Han says, if you don't sleep well. And Han, you're actually going to play shortly. We're only a few blocks from the historic Marshall Chess Club. Did you find out your pairing for round two?
No, it's not online yet, so
okay.
That's good.
Yeah, that is good. So your brain isn't swimming too much. And so were you white last night, it sounds like?
I was white, yes. I will be black this afternoon, and then white this evening, I hope.
Okay.
Yes.
And did you...
But I think also just the prepping, I think it's very hard at this moment, because you're playing all kind of systems and not too many games in the databases. So I think just be present, and I have my repertoire, and I'll trust that.
Okay, and you are going to...
This morning I've been working on my new Chessable course, so let's do something else, right? Busy with chess.
I'm just curious. So, I mean, you're a little bit older than I am,
yeah.
And you still go to these OTB tournaments. And like, what keeps you motivated to keep playing?
So, actually here I'm meeting a few students, so that's fun. I like to meet other people, and one thing that has changed is, like, I I like to watch the youth players and how they are developing. So for me, it's not only, you could say, the mental exercise or the competition. I think it's much more the social experience for me.
Yeah.
To be in New York, in the Marshall, such a historic place, meeting students, seeing the youth, and how chess evolves, how they are playing and approaching chess.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that is one of the best things, I think, about OTB Chess that doesn't get enough credit, which is it's such an amazing socializing experience.
Yeah.
And that is really the part that I do love about OTB Chess. It just, you know, I'd like the faster time controls.
Talk about Weikan Zee, right?
Yeah. I mean, like, Weikan Zee is one of the most cozy tournaments to go to, right? Like, for me, the best part's not necessarily in the playing hall. It's when I finish my game and then, like, sometimes you get that moment where, like, you connect with your opponent, like, cool, let's go to the bar, let's go sit down and look at this game again and talk it over. And that's probably one of the more fun parts about, like, being at a tournament like that and being together with all these other people who are passionate about chess. And so, you know, as much as I'm not so into the longer time controls, I probably sometimes spend more time analyzing the game and talking to people than I spend on the actual game.
Yeah, and that's a component of my book as well, because, like, if you're, like, we're all sort of air quotes insiders, you know, we've been in chess for a long time, we know a lot of people, but if you're coming from the outside, like, in order for it to be sustainable, like, you need that network.
Yeah.
You know, it's in order for it to be like a healthy, enjoyable hobby, you've got to find some people that share it with you, and you may or may not be able to connect online, but obviously, like, the fact we're meeting in person for the first time, like, after all these years, you know, I think your first email to me, Geert, was in like 2018, and yours was probably like around the same time. So, yeah.
Actually, you know that I've said this before, right? On the podcast, the Perpetual Chess Podcast is the reason that I found Chessable and I started working for Chessable.
Might as well say it again, but
okay,
yeah.
So, there you go. Yeah, I listened to your first interview with Christoph Selecki. I think like your third episode.
Yeah.
That was how I found out about Chessable, and then.
Yeah,
the rest is history.
Yeah, awesome story. All right, well, I think we're about ready to wrap up. Han's got a game to play. Geert wants to get a game in or two before we go. Anything to add, guys? Oh, I did want to ask you, Han, before we go. So what is the upcoming Chessable course that you teased?
So it's an improved Milner-Berry gambit.
Oh, I played a lot of Milner-Berry as a kid. I love that opening.
But it's based on...
We got to fix the king and queen, but you could show...
Yeah, so based
people.
On the
and it doesn't matter that we're missing it'd be better if we were missing a white pawn since it's the Milner-Berry gambit, but
yes. So it's known now also as the Hector variation.
Okay.
Based on the Swedish
GM yeah,
who's been playing it since 2007. William Jones he published an excellent book.
We're missing a pawn here, but that's
Yeah, I discovered I had that classic chess player moment. I brought this set. I usually only use it in tournaments. I took it out before we recorded, and the pawn was gone. Left at a hotel in Philadelphia.
So, Wayne Jones, Coffee House Repertoire 2. So, he just castles and doesn't take back. So, this is the improved Milner-Berry.
Okay.
And he calls it Coffee House Repertoire, but this is, for instance, what Anish used against Magnus Carlsen. So a lot of these openings, the Coffee House Repertoire, are really top-notch. And this is, I think, very interesting. If black takes the pawn on c3, the engines already give you an advantage.
Oh, wow.
So, of course, it's all about initiative and activity, and it fits with my other courses.
Okay.
Yeah. And I always thought that the French is a difficult opening to play against, and I really enjoy this opening.
Yeah, I won so many games. This is pre-engine age, so like as a teenager, I won so many games in the Milner-Berry, but it got tougher to uphold as engines get stronger. So I'm legit excited for it. And for people listening on audio, we'll link to a quick PGN and obviously update the link eventually. Do you know when the course will be available?
It has gone through beta testing, but Chessable has some new standards related to paid courses and the minimum number of variations. So I always try to keep them small.
Uh-huh.
Right? I have a certain philosophy based on club players based on the Lead Chess Rapid and Classical database. So it might work typical around like 20 to 40 variations, but paid courses have to be now above 50, so I have to expand it a bit in the coming weeks. And then we'll submit for publication.
Excellent. Okay. If only we knew someone who could get that approved.
No, I leave that up to the team.
Okay.
Like, at that point, like, however they want to set the standards and change them. At some point, I can't be involved in every single bit of the process anymore. I have to work on other things. So there's a reason why they do that, and then they have good reasons to do that, because there has to be a difference between, let's say, a paid and a free course in terms of like the amount of value that you get. And so that's one of the things.
Okay. All right. Well, guys, this has been a lot of fun. We will link to Hans Chessable account, the email address for any Chessable feedback, hello@chessable.com. We'll link to your Twitter bios, although I don't want to get into what's going on with Twitter right now. Who knows how long that will be relevant. But anything to add first, Geert, before we say goodbye?
No, man. Thanks for meeting me here in the park. It's been fun, and hopefully it's been a somewhat interesting catch-up.
Yeah, and Han, nice to have your bonus appearance and to meet you, IRL. And good luck in your games, of course.
Thank you.
Podcast Network. Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.